Yo, I went to Chapel Hill literally from orientation freshman year. We were like taught to hate Duke. Like, it was like on the agenda of things you're going to learn. It's like how much we hate Duke.
My wife is a Tar Heel.
Nice.
I don't know if you can see this.
Yeah, let me see.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, it's littered through the entire house. This is definitely a Tar Heel house.
A Tar Heel house. Tar Heel born, Tar Heel bred.
When you die, you'll be Tar Heel dead.
Right. I know. You know it well. Wow. Hello, shiny epi people. This is Lisa Bodner. Welcome back to the show. I'm really happy that you're here. You can find the show on Instagram and Twitter at Shiny Epi People. And if you would like to become a patron of the show, we are at patreon.com/shinyepipeople. Thanks to the nearly 50 patrons of the show. I'm so grateful for your support and for your belief in me in putting out a great show. Today, I'm speaking with John Pamplin. John is a postdoc at NYU, and he received his PhD and MPH in epidemiology from Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health. As a psychiatric and social epidemiologist, John studies the consequences of structural racism and systemic inequality on mental health and substance use outcomes. In particular, his work is interested in understanding the roles that policy, the criminal legal system, and drug policy enforcement play in producing racial patterns in opioid overdose, arrests, and related harms. John and I cover a range of topics in our conversation, including how to conference well, how we've done that at SER, how attending Morehouse, a historically Black college, informed his racial identity, mentorship, and much more. I hope you enjoy this chat. Hi.
How are you?
Thanks for making time to do this with me.
Of course.
I was trying to remember. Hold on. We met at SER. But just a quick hello.
Yes, that is true.
You were dancing at my dance party?
So we met like the posters, I think before, and then again at the dance party.
Okay.
Came to one of your parties before the dance
what
party.
Do you mean? Oh, like the year before?
Seattle. Yes.
Yes. Okay. I remember that now.
Yes.
Okay, Seattle. So that was the anniversary of SER. Did you go to the aquarium?
I did not because I was a broke graduate student.
Okay. Yes. And then did you go to my after party? It was like a place that might have like gone up in flames.
I missed that.
Okay. For your own safety, it was probably a good idea.
Whenever there is a like real deal in-person SER again, none of the morning sessions are going to have any attendance because people are going to be out of their mind every night. So my first SER was in Miami, the Epi Congress.
Yep.
And it was also the summer that I had to take my methods qualifying exam, which was scheduled for 3 weeks after SER. So myself and my cohort mates, like we'd find the random empty room at 6 a.m. before breakfast and do our study session.
You know, there have been times that I am just rolling in at 6 a.m.
Take me with you. I am on board. No,
yes.
It's actually something that I don't think academics really talk about openly, that conferences can be fun. There is a annual biomedical research conference, ABRCAMS. I think minority student is the end of the acronym.
Okay.
I was in a scholarship program in college and we would go every year. I think I learned how to conference then.
Oh.
Which is important because when you're 21 and you just got stuck in Phoenix all of a sudden with a bunch of other college kids, the It's a very different experience after you've had dinner and you're like, okay, I'm not going to bed. So we've gone to this conference every year that I was in college. I kind of approach a lot of things professionally based on my experience, not just that conference, but throughout my experience in that scholarship program. I mean, it was very, we did a lot of business trips. I mean, our spring break was accounted for every year. And the director of that program, it was very much understood, you know, you all are adults. I don't care as long as you're here on time and ready to go and dressed and all those things. I just don't believe in there's a rule that you can't have fun.
Yeah. And people in our field are fun.
Yes. As you are highlighting through this podcast. Right?
People are super fun.
So I went to Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia. It's part of the Atlanta University Center, which is a great set of historically Black colleges and universities. So Spelman College, Clark Atlanta University, Morris Brown. It is a fun place to be. For example, there is something called Market Friday, which was just a block party on Spelman's campus every single Friday. That was just what you did on Fridays, if you were a normal student and not in my scholarship program, who had our seminars at 5 p.m. on Friday every single week.
That is so mean.
It is. My senior year, I was the president of the scholarship program. And the final Friday of that semester, me and my friends, we're going to Market Friday. We're going. Like, I've not had a chance to really do that. I'm going and I'm living it up.
Yeah.
Newly 21. So I get a text on my phone and they're like, they're asking where you are. They're expecting you to like say some words.
Right.
And I showed up and I'm not in a suit, which was a thing. We were supposed to be in a suit every time.
Oh, suit.
Yeah. Oh, I had a suit hanging in the backseat of my car.
Wow.
And so what would happen is I would get emails saying, hey, there's this thing at the president's house. We'd like you to go. And so I had this habit of just having a suit in my car. And I remember I left Market Friday. And I was like, I'm not changing. I'm not doing it. I'm going like this. And I went and I gave my little speech, as it were, which apparently went over quite well, even though I had been day drinking for a few hours at that point. And I went up to my program director and I just told her, I thank you for everything that you've done and I love you. I'm going back to Market Friday now. And Morehouse is a men's institution. You know, for the context of going to Morehouse and what that meant for me in particular, as much stigma as there is around being Black, and especially in, I think, higher education, it's compounded when you're talking about Black men in many ways. And I had a really important, I think, development of my identity while I was at that school. And I'm from Ohio originally. I did not grow up with a lot of other Black men in the area where I grew up.
Where'd you grow up?
The village of Yellow Springs. It's roughly 4,000 people. Dayton, if you're familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically right outside of Dayton, Ohio. You know, there were a few other Black students. When there are so few Black individuals and Black men in particular, you don't get to see a spectrum of what it means to be Black. And it becomes very easy to fall into societal tropes that being Black is a specific thing, or that you have to do certain things to be quote unquote Black. So going to Morehouse, where suddenly my entire student body was, you know, people who identify primarily as Black men, and you see like, oh, Blackness isn't tied to, you know, solely to some kind of societal kind of pop cultural aspect. It certainly informs the experience. I could just be myself for myself and not have to feel like I'm trying to also be part of this culture. When I look back on my childhood, especially in high school, I think I did a lot of chasing what I thought it meant to be Black. And like, I went to a Montessori school for most of my childhood.
Did you?
Yeah. And by most of my childhood, I mean through eighth grade. So literally until high school. And so I went to public high school freshman year and I had more than one other Black person in my class for the first time. And I was suddenly finding myself trying to fit in ways that frankly, to the extent that I didn't fit in, had less to do with quote unquote blackness and more to do with the fact that I've been going to school with five other kids at a time for the last however many
That's
years.
That's right.
And I did a lot of my parents' approach to parenting was to throw me into everything possible and to kind of see what stuck. I played varsity sports, I played basketball, and I did track, but I also did soccer, which was culturally a bit different. But then I also was in orchestra. So I had all these different kind of groups. Some aligned with my racial identity and some did not. I mean, just to be flat out about it, there were far more Black people on my basketball team than there was in the orchestra. In my limited perspective of what Blackness was, that meant that I could be proud about being on the basketball team, but I wanted to be kind of hush-hush about being in orchestra. And so that was one of the main things, I think, for me going to Morehouse and getting to see a spectrum of identity was that none of these things are racially tied. Like, my identity, especially my racial identity, has nothing to do with whether I play music or play sports or how many, you know, science classes I take. And that was easily the thing that I took away from that collegiate experience that carries even now. When I first, me and my dad went and visited the campus. We were trying to find a building. We couldn't find it. There were a group of guys hanging out on a bench, laughing, joking, and we couldn't figure out where we're going. My dad told me to go ask one of them, and I was like, no, I'm not going to go over there. We don't know anything about them. And I just remember my dad went and he's like, excuse me, can you show us where so-and-so building is? This student was like, of course, sir. And not only told us where to go, but then showed us. He actually left his friends, walked us to the building. And that was part of kind of this, I think, respect for elders type piece that's really ingrained in the culture there. But I mean, honestly, it was a moment for myself of my own kind of internalized racism, honestly, that I was afraid to ask these young, loud Black men to, because like, I don't know, that they seem scary. I can only admit these things freely now because I can recognize that this is a culture that we all grow up in. And it has been growth for me to recognize that. But the point is, having that experience before I even enrolled as a student, I think kind of shook me a little bit about how I was going to come to the school and what aspects of my past life I was going to kind of leave at home.
Did you feel at all obligated to talk about your racial identity when you came on the show?
I did not. Not in a way that wasn't self-obligation. It is a huge part for me at this kind of stage of where I am in my life, where we are talking so much about diversity and inclusion, right? Everyone's department is talking so much about that. Part of that is also having these kind of frank conversations about what that is and you know, really shaking up the idea of colorblindness, right? You know, we don't have to avoid the conversation to be not racist. And in fact, promoting the conversation is what we should be talking. Like, when we're talking about inclusion, we're talking about including these stories that often get overlooked. And these, you know, this bit of a conversation may not apply to, for example, all of the white listeners in the same way that there are so many conversations that don't apply to so many, like, you know, Black listeners and other listeners of other identities. And that's fine. And that's the point. Like, it's not to say that every conversation has to be applied to everybody. It's the fact that you include conversations for everyone. Yeah. So it was something that I saw as an opportunity for the platform, frankly. I am active on Twitter, for example, and I'm active in EpiTwitter, and especially among trainees. Like, there is a critical mass of young Black EPI trainees. And I've had so many conversations with them about SER, for example, because the reality is Black people on average have not felt that comfortable at SER for, I know a number of investigators who say, yeah, I don't go to that meeting. Something that was really cool in Minneapolis, we had a moment that is one of the things that was so disappointing about not being in person this next meeting, because a lot of us were really looking to kind of continue that energy. So for me, I just think about those other you know, trainees who, like, I have, I guess it comes back to that idea of mentoring. When I just think of, you know, things that I would have loved to have seen for myself and heard for myself. And if I find myself in a position to maybe do that for other folks, then let's go for it.
Oh, I'm so glad you're part of our community, John.
I'm glad to be a part of this community.
You must have had some really great mentorship when you were at Morehouse.
Yes.
Which I think is hard to find in an undergrad. Like, as an undergrad, I would have had to, like, really, really seek out mentors. Was it more, like, in place for you there?
So I will say there's two things about that. And this is a shameless plug for going to a school, to an HBCU, especially as a Black student, is that you do get nurtured in a way that often is not the case for you at a predominantly white institution. So that's the first thing I'd say. It's something that now I have to walk into rooms all the time knowing that, because that was my first experience. And then part of that experience for me was being taught very explicitly how to seek out mentors moving forward. So I've been fortunate. I've had amazing mentors my entire academic career. So, you know, going back to the director of my scholarship program, and I'm still in contact with, for example, like my organic chemistry professor.
Oh.
So my first PI that I worked for was Dr. Dan Hummer in the psychology department. I mean, he changed kind of the trajectory of my life in terms of giving me real ownership of a project as, like, a junior. I've always had people, including him, including Dr. Shipman Young, who's that organic chemistry professor, who, you know, not only in the immediate made sure I was taken care of, but, you know, everything I did afterwards, they were always asking. I remember when I asked for recommendation letters for some summer program, I told Dr. Shipman Young which schools they were for, and then he had this whole conversation with me afterwards, explaining to me the idea of, like, what a research one institution is, and recognizing trajectory-wise why an internship at certain programs would mean something different versus others. And that's the type of thing, just taking the time out, recognizing, like, hey, you might not know this yet, so let me make kind of help catch you to speed. And so when I left undergrad, I feel like I knew way more about the idea of being an academic than many of my peers, even in my master's program, and some of the people when I was a doctoral student. I didn't grow up knowing it, just like many of them didn't. So my privilege came in the way of great mentors.
So how do you give back?
I am a huge believer in being a mentor, and I also think that you don't have to wait till you have a faculty position to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, peer mentors can at times be more important.
Yes.
It's important to have that person who you can be truly vulnerable with. And sometimes your faculty mentor can be that person too, but having someone who's more immediately in that stage, whether it's people who came up behind me in the doctoral program when I was at Columbia. I was fortunate to always have kind of a critical mass of Black students when I was at Columbia. And we kind of formed our own support system. And one of the things that we've started doing was making sure that when new students came in, we brought them in. We brought them in the fold. And so even now that I've graduated and left, I make a point of reaching out and meeting the new students and letting them know, like, do you want to schedule a monthly meeting and chat? I recognize that I'm junior enough that I don't have all the answers, but I am.
I don't think anyone has all the answers.
Exactly.
How senior you are, yeah.
Exactly. I can at least tell you what I was thinking when I was where you were, because it wasn't that long ago, and I can and I still remember it very distinctly.
What do you think something that people get wrong about you?
I am incredibly good at presenting as confident.
Okay, say more.
So, for example, that session you were talking about, I probably, like, if I wasn't, like, holding something, I probably would have just been tapping away. I was the biggest ball of nerves. I am a lot of times, actually. I have a background in public speaking to some extent. Morehouse, in its insight, a required speech class was part of the biology major. But so what that means is that I have developed the ability to speak well enough, even if I am kind of a ball of nerves, because I can lean back on that training and just kind of get through it in that way.
Are you like super nervous at the beginning, but then you calm down a bit in?
Depends. Some of them I black out and I don't remember the experience. That symposium, that critical race theory symposium, I don't know what I said.
Really?
No idea.
Interesting.
So there's that. That's probably the number one thing.
Yes, I wouldn't have known that about you.
You know, everyone just about has some level of nerves about speaking in public, right?
Yeah.
It just kind of varies from person to person. And so the point is, even if you're on the higher end of those nerves, it's still doable.
Did you do gymnastics when you were little?
That was part of my parents' strategy to put me in everything. You know, their thing was, we'll put you in it. It's up to you to decide whether you want to continue or not. While I was taking gymnastics, there was a new show that started that all the kids were taken by storm called Power Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
Every day when I left my gymnastics class, it was just in time to see the ending credits in the lobby of the place. And I would go to school on Monday and all the kids were talking about it. And I think I just like went up to my parents crying like, oh, I want to watch Power Rangers. And that's why I quit.
Today, what kind of gymnastics could you do on a mat?
A mean cartwheel.
Could you?
I could do a mean cartwheel.
Without hurting yourself?
Yes. I believe to this day I could do a cartwheel. And a round off. And that's probably the extent of what I can do safely.
I tried a cartwheel like a few years ago when my daughters were like, you know, let's do cartwheels. And I was like, I could do a cartwheel. And I like pulled my hamstring. It was terrible.
I will say the last time I tried to do a cartwheel, it did not go well, but not out of execution.
Yeah.
I was not dressed accordingly, and I ripped my pants. My wife was on the ground cackling. So that.
Well, SER, cartwheel time.
Someone has to remind me to bring a pair of shorts. That's the deal. I will.
Okay.
Yeah.
A year and a half from now.
Chicago.
If you could go back and relive something from college, what would it be?
Ooh. Okay, so I was on a freshman step team in college.
No way.
Step was like what was the biggest thing on campus. It was like part of the freshman experience.
Could you explain what it is to anyone who might not know what it is?
So stepping is a rhythmic sequence of stomping and clapping and generally conducted like within a team. And so like there's precision is a big element of it. And
it's choreographed, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you have competitions where teams compete and you're judged on your things, like how creative was the sequence and the precision elements of it. And you know, you have to be loud and energetic. There's a whole lot to it. Our step team, my freshman year, we won all the shows on campus. We actually went to Florida and we were on TV. BET's Spring Bling had a step show that year.
Oh my.
And we won that too. When we got back to Atlanta, we started getting booked to do exhibitions at different things around the city. After doing this all year long, we got reached out to by Sony Records. They were getting ready to shoot a music video for a new artist. And asked us if we would be in the video. We had been doing this, like, honest. I mean, step season started in October. And we were just like, we want to go home. We're tired. The artist, I remember in the fall, it was this woman named Tiffany. And her debut video came out. And it was featuring Ciara. Ciara was like the biggest thing back then. And she's still big now. But like, we all kicked ourselves because we missed this opportunity. Yeah. So I would go back. I'd relive that.
Yeah.
I would also tell us like to suck it up and go do this one last thing. And
right, right. If you had a warning label, do you know what yours would be?
My warning label, according to me, would be careful can be will overthink you to death.
Oh.
My wife would tell you my warning label is careful cannot tell a short story.
Hey, I disagree. I mean,
thank you.
I'm digging this. Like, I love a storyteller. Like, there's no one I would rather spend time with than a storyteller.
I see, that's how I think of it too. I will walk into a room and she'll see it on my face. And she will say, I need you to be succinct.
Yeah. Growing up, we always called it, we're telling a Bodner story.
Oh.
Because in my family, we all like to tell long stories. That it's like, settle in. I got a Bodner story for you.
But those are, it's fascinating. I mean, storytelling is a huge part of society, right? We all love, who goes to the movies unless to hear a story with videos?
Entertainment is storytelling.
Yes.
Side of salad or soup?
Ooh, I will probably, if it's an interesting soup, I'm going to go soup.
Like what?
So my thing for just about anything food related is that I would rather try something new than something I've had and really liked.
Okay.
And so the prospect of me having a new soup is just higher than a new salad.
That's right. Because who's going to make a new side salad?
There's only so much you can do. Especially, right, a side salad. No one is swinging for the fences for a side
no.
salad.
I think that's a good way to put it. Okay, I'm going to list some things. And I'd like you to tell me yes or no.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Craft beer.
Yes.
Are you drinking craft beer right now?
I am. This is nice. Something from Appalachian something. I'm also, I mean, for those just listening, I'm now sitting in the dark. So the sun is
I know. You are really dark. I can see very little of you. See,
there's actually a light switch. I've just been like so lazy.
Oh, there we go. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'm a person again.
Wow, you are.
Wicked Weed Brewing is apparently the company that I am.
Okay. Spelling.
No. Spell check.
Me too. I'm a no. I'm a horrible speller. Talking on the phone.
Ooh, that takes me back to my childhood. I'm going to go yes.
Wait, even at your age now, as a millennial, you're okay with talking on the phone?
I am still of the generation that my, like, people had to call the house phone and, like,
okay.
I would have to, like, kind of hopefully grab it before my parents did and, like,
yeah.
Yes. No, I'm
okay. All right. You're a phone talker.
I am.
I like it. Peanut butter.
Yes.
Crunchy peanut butter.
Yes.
Spicy food.
Yes.
Belts.
Yes.
In COVID times, you're going to say yes to belts?
Oh, I mean, I haven't worn one in COVID times.
You're such a cool dude. I'm so glad I know you. Thank you for sharing your story, for being vulnerable, for taking time.
Of course.
It was really fun.
This was a blast.
What's your COVID uniform? Are you wearing it?
No, I actually have real pants on. So I have jeans.
So do I. I have real pants on right now.
Okay, so here's the thing.
I'm dressed up for you.
You look lovely, by the way.
Thank you. I'm wearing a sweater. Look, I have a necklace on. I have earrings on.
I have listened to a few of these episodes, and I've heard a number of conversations about, you know, folks and their attire. And I had this moment because I packed, like I said, I'm at my in-laws' house.
Yeah.
Where I basically brought three black t-shirts, three pairs of sweatpants and a hoodie. And I was like, I could have like brought something and like actually like tried to look Yeah, so.
Excuse me, I wanted your suit.
I know, right?
Please, now that I know you had this standard, why not for shiny Epi people, John?